Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Yep.
I have a... Oh, where did it go? Shoot. I had a news story that was like a... It's calling the end... That's not like an apocalyptic end of the world. It's titled, Don't Call the Pro-Life Swedish Midwife. Have you read this one, Mike?
What?
Don't call the pro-life Swedish midwife.
Don't call the pro-life Swedish midwife. Yeah?
You know, I missed that one. It was on my add to bookmarks or whatever.
Yeah. I deleted my bookmarks on accident. So,
here's the thing. Yeah. I've probably added 15 things to a bookmark, never looked at one of them. Never one time.
Yeah, do you ever look back and go, why did I do that?
Yeah. Some guy posted something on Facebook, I mean literally like 5 years ago, and it was like, how to get people to read your emails. I'm like, yeah, I should read that. And I bookmarked it, and I just saw it like a couple months ago. I'm like, boy, I must have been sending 5 years worth of ineffective emails because I have not read this article.
Do you guys remember that website we were going off of for the 50 Reasons God Doesn't Exist?
Oh, yeah.
We did that years ago. I have that bookmark still in one of my laptops. Like, that article list I have there, and I'm just like, yeah, man, I might read through those someday. I'm like, wait a minute, no, I'm not going to.
Do you remember the name of that website? What if he's added some? Ben?
Actually, I thought about going back through them because I don't recall what our answers were.
And maybe, hey, who knows? Maybe we've grown, and I certainly hope that I answer some of those better than I did 5 years ago.
I've actually listened to some of those shows recently, and we did okay.
Well, hold on. What was it? 50
reasons.
50 proofs God is.
Or 50 proofs God isn't real, or God doesn't exist, or something like that.
The happy atheist or something.
The happy atheist. Okay, hold on. Here we go. GodIsImaginary.com, 50
yes,
simple proofs.
Same thing.
Okay. Oh, yeah, there it is. I remember this whole thing. Yeah, maybe we'll get back to it. Hold on, let me see if there's any bonuses. Here you go, Mike. I'm going to test you on proof number 50.
Okay, I'm ready.
Ready?
Yeah.
Proof number 50. Ask Jesus to appear.
I'm ready.
Just about everyone knows the story of Jesus' death and resurrection. The story is summarized in the Apostles' Creed. Jesus was crucified, died, and was buried. He descended into hell, and on the third day he rose again from the dead. There's only one way for Jesus to prove that he rose from the dead. He had to appear to people. Therefore, several different places in the Bible describe Jesus' appearance after his death. Matthew 28, Mark 16, Luke 24, John 20 and 21. And 1 Corinthians 15:3-6 provides a nice summary of those passages written by Paul. As you can see in this passage, Jesus appeared to hundreds of people a number of different times. When we look at 1 Corinthians 15:3-6, there is a question that comes to mind. Why did Jesus stop making these appearances? Why isn't Jesus appearing today? It really is odd. Obviously, Paul benefited from a personal meeting with the resurrected Christ. Because of the personal visit, Paul could see for himself the truth of the resurrection, and he could ask Jesus questions. So why doesn't Jesus appear to everyone and prove that he is resurrected, just like he appeared to Paul? There's nothing to stop Jesus from materializing in your kitchen tonight to have a personal chat with you. And if you think about it, Jesus really does need to appear to each of us. If Paul needed a personal visit from Jesus to know that Jesus was resurrected, then why wouldn't you? It is an important question for the following reasons. We are told by the Bible that Jesus appeared to hundreds of people. We therefore know that it is okay for Jesus to appear to people. It does not take away their free will, for example, because it was okay for Jesus to appear to hundreds of other people. We know that it would be easy for Jesus to appear to everyone all through history, since Jesus is all-powerful and timeless. We know that if Jesus did reappear to everyone, it would be incredibly helpful. We could all know personally that Jesus is resurrected and that Jesus is God. If Paul and all the other people in the Bible needed a personal visit to know that Jesus was resurrected, then why not you and me? Yet we all know that Jesus has not appeared to anyone in 2,000 years. In other words, there is nothing stopping Jesus from appearing to you and several good reasons for him to appear. In addition, Jesus promises that he will appear to you. All that we have to do is pray to Jesus like, Dear Jesus, please appear to us, as you did to Paul and the 500 brethren, so that we can see the evidence of your resurrection. In your name we pray, amen. And he's going to quote Matthew 7:7, asking it will be given to you, seeking you will find, knocking it will be opened to you. Whatever you ask in my name, I will do it. And then again I say to you, if two of you agree on my earth about anything you ask, it will be done for them in heaven, crazily out of context, Matthew 18. Jesus is actually in our midst, so he is right here already, supposedly. Yet when we pray to him physically to materialize, as he did to hundreds of others, nothing happens. Isn't it odd that nothing happens, given the fact that Jesus promised us that something will happen? Isn't it odd that nothing happens when supposedly Jesus is right here with us already, and materialization would be trivial for him? Isn't it odd that nothing happens when supposedly Jesus was happy to appear to hundreds of others? What you will find, if you think about it, is that the situation we see here is the kind of unambiguous situation described in a prior proof. We have created a situation where coincidence cannot answer the prayer. The only way for this prayer to be answered is for Jesus to actually unambiguously materialize. In this situation, we also know that, one, it is trivial for Jesus to materialize. Two, there would be many benefits if Jesus did materialize. Three, Jesus has supposedly materialized to other human beings. Four, Jesus has promised to answer our prayer that he materialized. Okay, he's going to sum it up here. How do we explain?
Wow.
How do we explain the fact, okay, that this prayer goes unanswered, no matter who prays, despite Jesus' promise that he will answer our prayers? As you think about this, you realize that Paul's story in the Bible is false. Simply look at Paul's story like any judge in a courtroom would. What Paul's story in 1 Corinthians 15 is suggesting is entirely unprecedented. A man dead 3 days with mortal wounds come back to life. Lazarus. Yet there is no evidence that it is true, and there are many alternative explanations for what Paul is saying.
Why does the fact that he has mortal wounds matter? Is dead enough?
He's not just dead.
Like, there's evidence that he is dead.
It wasn't like he was inflicted with a disease and then he got the... Right. It was that
apart
was
from
death.
He stinketh. I want to see some gas.
Paul could be fabricating the story. Paul could have hallucinated or dreamed the meeting. Paul could have seen an imposter, etc. In addition, no one is seeing Jesus today, even though it would be trivially and obvious for Jesus to appear to people today.
Just keep
like
saying that. I'd like to see his data. Has he interviewed every single human being, the 6 billion people or so, or just the 4 people he knows?
Shut up. We're done with him.
Hold on.
What else could he possibly say? He's regurgitated the same thing.
Hold on. What about Jesus' famous statement in the Bible? Happy are those who have not seen yet still believe. What you realize is that this statement creates the perfect cover for a scam. Let's say you're Jesus. You're a normal human being. You realize that you are going to die, because everybody does. I'm sure that's really his circumstance. You know, thinking about the long time of my life, I should fool these people now.
I want people to remember me.
Nothing pays off like the long con after you died.
The 2,000-year long con.
Here's a final sentence. If the resurrection were true, then Jesus would be answering prayers as he promises in the Bible. He would appear when people pray to see him. The reason why he does not appear is simple. Both Jesus and God are imaginary.
Okay. Now listen here, Mr. I'm going to see him and believe. Talk to everyone else in the Bible that turned away when Jesus started throwing down some hard teaching, and they're like, yeah, this ain't for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, and all the people that saw him after he resurrected, right? Even the two dudes on the trail were like, wow, and then blown away and turned around and follow. Even the people that knew him were like, I don't know, man, this is still a little shifty. You know what I'm saying? Like, act like some crazy, you know, glowing man going to show up to you, and you're going to be like, you know what? That's the ticket. That's me.
Well, and out of all the people in the New Testament that Jesus appeared to post-resurrection, were any of them saying, okay, Jesus, appear?
Right. Yeah,
I don't think it worked that way.
That's true. Jesus was just doing what he normally does, and people caught him doing it.
He's like, I will bless you with my presence so you know I'm alive, rather than... I mean, who's the God in the relationship?
Exactly. You know what? We were just talking about this because we were reading, Mark 6, where Jesus is walking on the water, you know? And the phrase in there that says, he meant to pass them by, but then they saw him, right? Which made me think that, like, when no one else is around, Jesus is like, well, the fastest way for me to get there is just to walk on this water. You know, regardless of whether they're men in a boat or not, I'm going to go over, you know? And they just happen to catch him doing it, like... Hey, by the way,
is that Jesus?
Because it always seemed like a bit of a setup to me. You know, I'm like, Jesus, like, I'll walk out there, then they'll see me, and then I'll be able to do this teaching I've been holding back on, you know? But he's like, you know what, A to B, ain't no one around, I'm just going to walk over.
Yeah, Mark's pretty clear. Jesus intended to just walk by him.
Yeah.
He was not intending to stop.
And the funny part is, like, the cool explanation he knew they were going to see him, right? But he didn't have intention to stop over the boat and make a big deal out of it. They should have just been like, yeah, Jesus does that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's something
that would have shown
does.
That their faith was growing. Like, they were starting to understand who he is and what he's there and who he represents. But no, once again, they're flabbergasted. Just can't believe this thing. He's like,
what?
Well, I guess I'm going to go over to the boat then.
And you didn't get the thing about the loaves.
It would have been funnier if he was burning past them. You know what I'm saying? Like, really taking a hard jog at it. How's the wind, boys?
I was walking the dog, but the dog couldn't do it.
He's got a fish on a leash dragging him over.
Wasn't that Aquaman? What was that a couple weeks ago?
Oh, Aquaman Jesus.
That's right. Dan makes a good point. There are actually quite a number of people who claim to have seen Jesus in the exact way Paul has seen him. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like he appears as like a vision type of thing. It's, he's not really in the flesh when he sees Paul. It's like a vision.
Genuinely, as people genuinely, sincerely seeking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they might wait a few years. I mean, it's not like, well.
Yeah, right. Are you coming or not?
I waited 5 minutes, Jesus.
Like if you use the word materialize, that's the secret Bible word. You know?
That's the open sesame.
How do you say materialize in the Greek and then you practice
it? I'll pull this out.
Like a candy man.
Look in the mirror and say Jesus three times and
Jesus
shows up behind you.
Jesus materialized.
He shows up. Hey, you said my name?
I was busy. Obviously, you called.
But then you said it three times, and I'm like, oh, man.
I have to.
And then you look to your right, and there's like a Mexican dude going, no, senor, he looking for me.
Jesus materialized. Jesus materialized. Jesus materialized.
It'd be sweet if he showed up, and you were like, should I build some tents?
Jesus, this is a sweet, cool thing, man. Should we build some tent for you guys? You know nothing. It's like, oh, all right, fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he say. He says, what about Jesus' favorite statement? Okay, Mike, what's the thought on happy are those who have not seen yet still believe is the long con? Is that even a good con?
Well, here's the thing. Con artists, like it has to come to fruition for it to be a con, right? Otherwise, it's just, it's like me trying to walk around downtown. I find a random guy that I don't know, and I'm like, hey, just so you know, I'm the senator from Alabama. And then I leave. If I never find out that he actually bought it or told other people or, you know, he's like writing in his autobiography, 50 years from now, I met a senator from Alabama downtown. Like, if I never found out he did any of that, what was the point of me being a con artist? You know what I'm saying? It's just me throwing out random lies into the universe just to know I can.
Jesus is some trickster that's just trying to play a big deal on a bunch of people. He doesn't care what the outcome is.
Right,
he just wants
to have a response. Otherwise, it wasn't a con.
He wants to mess him up for a bit.
He's the most ineffective charlatan ever. Yeah. He's just, there's no gain at all for telling the lie. Like, if these are lies, there's absolutely no benefit. As a matter of fact, they are what ultimately leads to his death. You don't see him, like, cackling on the cross. Is like, got you, sucker.
Yeah.
This is the stupidest con ever.
And really, like, this is where he gets me. Because if I remember anything about these 50 proofs, like, he strings this weird logic all together, you know, like, the Bible is full of this one long con. He does believe that they're like they're separate people and they're written by some of the books are written by different people and I'm like, who even puts up with this, right? Like so far, like we can prove one of the most historically accurate things is generally the Bible because there's enough historical writing around it apart from the Bible that we can say John was a man, Jesus was a man, like there was other people that saw these guys, right? And like to the point where they were killed for this long con. From a guy,
all of them,
who's randomly just walking around telling lies.
Yeah, and every one of his disciples also fell for the con.
Yeah,
after they saw him die and not resurrect, and they were willing to die for the con,
right, and continue around and get everyone else around them into the con.
Yeah,
even though it ended the murder
with consistent theology and perpetuation of said beliefs for hundreds of years following up until today.
So it would be
quite successful con, boys.
It would be a perfect example if that cult that drank the juice and died, right? One of them happens to be out at the store, right? He come back home and find everybody dead and drank the juice. This guy is insinuating that John said, yeah, I'll take that juice too. Obviously, it will turn out different for me, right? Normal people would walk in and go, boy, that juice was a terrible idea. I'm going to do something different.
Right.
I mean, how many times have you seen people abandon everything they have ever stood for to save their own skin?
About the time they say, hey, Ben, we're going to boil you in oil if you don't reject this fake charlatan.
Yeah.
And I say, you know what? Yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah, Jesus wasn't a senator from Alabama. I was just, I made that up.
Yeah, I feel like there's plenty of opportunity to bail here.
Here's the thing. There's good conversations to be had about some of the more outrageous stuff you read in the Bible. This just doesn't happen to be one of them. It's just not a good one. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not something where I don't feel like maybe the direct quotes aren't going to support what you're trying to say, but like the reactions of people, actions always speak louder than words. And I got to thousands of dead Christians from when Jesus was born until now, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of people that have died in the name of Christ. All for this long con. I mean, I would have bailed a long time ago. You know the sacrifices Jesus asked for when he says, join my kingdom? He says, these things got to go. You got to take on these things. I'll give you joy and peace in return and a father to have, right? And like, but like earthly things, worldly things, they have to go, right? And people continue to do it. I mean, that's one heck of a con that has some legs.
Right.
You know, like I told the guy I was senator of Alabama, and then they just went ahead and made me one. just because I told enough people, right? That's basically what he's insinuating.
It's like, you know, there's this guy in Iowa that keeps saying he's the senator of Alabama. Like 40 dudes believe him. I think we should just make him.
Yeah, we're tired of this mess. We're just going to
ask Mike for his vote on H.R. 432.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's legitimize this guy's claim, see what he could do with it.
And then to prove that I'm part of the Congress, I will say in absentia. I will not be there.
All right. Well, maybe we'll hit those.
Those are fun.
Let's see. Also tonight, we got Boova be talking. Boova, give me a preview on what you'd be talking about.
So within the last couple of weeks, kind of coming to a spearhead last week, I have been in this weird place where I felt the fear of failure for a lot of things that are going on. Literally crush me. Like, and I mean that, and not trying to be cliche in that statement, but like, up to a point where like last week I was in tears, talking to people that I care about, begging them to give me some kind of sense about this deal because I was so scared of every single thing in my life right now that's going well, just completely crumbling, around me and then me falling backwards into a pit that I've been in many times before. Not recently, but kind of just in this depressive state.
One that you would recognize, like you had a chair there, there are a couple.
Right, exactly.
Furniture.
Yeah, exactly. You've like been I'd find a happy sandwich that I left. But no, it was fairly bad to, like, it ended, kind of in a scream fit between me and God, where I'm driving in my truck and I'm literally screaming at the top of my lungs, windows rolled up and everything. Cause I didn't want to scare anybody into thinking that I need to be pulled over and, incarcerated, but, screaming at the top of my lungs, mad at God and mad about certain things and had to kind of work that out. And I just kind of had to be reminded of something simple, like something super simple that I've known forever, but it was weird. And I was reminded in a way that is super interesting, like a song that I knew when I was a kid, and hit me just differently as an adult than it ever has. And it ended from the scream fit between God and I turned into I hysterically belly laughed. For a good 15 minutes, almost had to pull over because I was laughing so hard, with this weird, scary, creepy elation that was going on. And so, it was emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and physically exhausting. So, yeah.
Was that the preview or was that the whole thing?
That was the preview.
Holy wow. Cats.
Yeah.
Man. All right.
Yeah. Well, I laughed. I cried.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So oh, yeah. Yeah. The rest.
This will be a Boova Speaks extended version.
Oh, man. We'll turn the second hour over to you and shut up.
Sounds like a plan. I might have to make the podcast.
Take that from here. All right. So here's the reason you don't call the pro-life Swedish midwife. So there's a guy that wrote a book called The Benedict Option. And if I can – I haven't read the book, but I read enough about the book. If I can summarize, it's basically Christianity's on its way out. It's time to run for the hills. Live it out boldly, but quit trying to rescue it in society. there's some interesting – I would recommend reading. There's a lot of nuance to that discussion, a lot of interesting perspective from there. But anyway, this article is by the same guy, and he said, since The Benedict Option was published, I've heard from a number of Christian readers on the European continent wanting to know more about it. These believers are far ahead of us Americans in having to deal with what it means to live in a post-Christian culture. As I reported here last year, though, the U.S. still remains far ahead of Europe in terms of religious affiliation and practice, but the sociological data show that we are now on the same steady path of decline. This is something very, very hard for American Christians to wrap their minds around. The harder we fight recognizing it, the more vulnerable we are to be. A reader of this blog told me that the people who run his conservative church insist that the congregation's young people are merely going through a phase with their unbiblical views in certain areas. They don't grasp the magnitude or the essence of the change. And this is a story from Sweden that gives you an idea of what's possibly coming to the U.S. Okay, this brings in our pro-life midwife. Eleanor Grimark didn't set out to wage a campaign. In 2007, the 40-year-old mother of two quit her catering job to become a midwife. She studied for years, dreaming of bringing life into the world. But Ms. Grimark was professionally blacklisted in Sweden for her opposition to abortion. Now she's at the center of a years-long legal dispute whose outcome will have implications for freedom of conscience in Sweden and across Europe. Despite a reputation for stellar health care, Sweden faces an acute midwife shortage. Blah, 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 blah. Local governments in many areas provide prospective midwives with a monthly stipend while they complete their certification. She drops out to do this, and they give her like $1,900 a month to study to become a midwife. She's a devout Christian. She knew that some midwives participate in abortions, but she assumed that hospitals would offer conscience carve-outs for practitioners like her. There's so much to do as a midwife, she says in an interview at her lawyer's office, so I just thought, okay, that's a one part, but I will do everything else. It turns out she was right. Over one-third of Swedish midwives have never had anything to do with abortion. Now listen here, that doesn't sound like a lot. A third? That means two-thirds of Swedish midwives are part of aborting babies.
I never would have connected a midwife with an abortion.
I know, right?
That's like...
It seems... Right?
I kind of got stuck on there, and I'm like, I don't know what else is going on there. I'm just like, oh, wait a minute, midwife?
Two-thirds abortion? Of Swedish midwives have taken part in abortions. And very few of them take place on maternal ward of hospitals where she wanted to work. But she underestimated the authorities' determination to root out anti-abortion sentiment. In spring 2013, with one term left in her studies, she asked supervisors at the hospital where she planned to work to accommodate her conscience rights. She received a furious call from one manager. How could you even think of becoming a midwife with these opinions? Ms. Grimark recalls the manager screaming, "What would you do if a patient who'd had an abortion came to you bleeding?" Ms. Grimark tried to answer that she would help a woman in that condition, but the voice on the phone kept screaming. She was told she wasn't welcome. A few days later, a text message informed her that her stipend would be cut off.
Ooh, the text.
I know, right? Rough times. On and on it went. She was denounced by Sweden's former anti-terrorism chief as being like Islamic extremists, this for holding pro-life views. A show on national television characterized her as part of a global war on women. This is all being sorted out by the courts now. A Swedish lower court ruled against her, but this week an appellate court will have its say, and it could end up in the European Court of Human Rights. The Journal piece points out that both Norway and Denmark protect abortion rights and freedom of conscience with no problem. Sweden is doing what it's doing out of spite to shut down any and all opposition to abortion. So I think the broad point of his article here is to say Europe is farther along in kind of its decline in undergirded morality. And he's basically saying, this is what the United States has to look forward to, and we're not recognizing that well enough. Ultimately, the impact of kind of this erosion of some of these moral fibers and what that means for a Christian trying to do normal things, like work or provide midwifery services or whatever. So what do you think? Overstated case or a viable warning?
Well, I think it's reality. I mean, it's happened. There's stories like that here now. I mean, it's just the cost of being a follower of Christ. You might have to change your course.
So what do you do about it, though, Dan? Right, like in this circumstance, this almost eliminates Christians from the midwifery business, right? Like, do you go to it anyway, knowing that there's going to be a fight, and or do you? I feel like if you bail from it, like we've just kind of ceded a whole occupation and saying, yeah. We can't deal in here.
I think it's always been that way. I wonder how many blacksmiths were Christians in the first century. Or became Christians and then had to work their way out because they're not making idols or whatever.
Right.
Trying to think of whatever trade.
I missed the connection there for a minute. I'm like,
you looked at me like, okay, better.
Yeah, why are blacksmiths
blacksmiths? Christians can't have horses.
They don't do horseshoes. Jeez, Dan.
That's a sign of luck.
We believe in Jesus.
One of them could be one of the apocalyptic horses and we don't take the risk.
I mean, whoever it is that makes idols, I assume blacksmith would do metal idol.
Yeah.
My main point is, that's part of culture. It's always has been. It's not a surprise. We've been in a little bubble for a few years in America, but globally even. And it's like, it's just going to happen. It's just going to happen.
Who was the biblical example of that? We're like, hey, you're ruining our idol business.
Oh, that was Ephesus? It was Paul in Ephesus. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like it's a new problem. You might be over. I don't know, dramatizing it a hair. Like, I don't think it's any worse than it's ever been, I guess is what I'm saying. Right? Like,
it's probably better.
Like, yeah, I think you're putting magnifying glass on it, and if you want to focus on it, you can focus on it and say it's this big, huge deal. I think it's always been a big, huge deal. And I think that we just sustain through it. Like, some things we fight, some things we go, all right, well, we'll do it at our houses if that's going to be the deal, right? Like, and I think that's a conscious thing, and it's a Holy Spirit thing, and sometimes you swing and swing until you can't swing anymore, and some things you go, look, if that's going to be your call, then we'll just gather in secret, and that'll be the deal.
So you say the poisons have just changed, right? Like, whatever it is with that the moral item has shifted and becomes the target for Christianity. I suppose in the first century it was, hey, look, you're not participating in public affirmations of the Roman gods. And you're like, well, okay, well, no, we don't really do that. And which means you're not taking part in manufacturing things for those. You're not taking part in, you know, whatever the triumphs and things are there. And I suppose as those things shift, you're always going to run into an interaction with people trying to live out Christian morality in a society that simply isn't our undergird.
I'm preaching through Philippians right now, and the whole context of that is people are being pushed out of the trade guilds, and I mean, they're suffering because of their faith. It was a big Roman outpost. They wanted the Roman gods. I mean, you know, it's everything we're talking about.
Yep.
And that was a couple thousand years ago.
Yeah, and it's once again, it's not like, I mean, even if you look at specifically just Jesus' time, like the Jews were basically in Jerusalem, centered around the temple. It's like, it's not like they just ran out through Roman society and said, well, I get to be a Jew whenever I want. I'll do whatever I want, and I'll set up a this and that, and I'll have a church here. And like, they had certain freedoms to do that because Romans didn't want any trouble. But like, overall, like, we enjoy a free society that most Christians aren't that's not what Christianity was born out of. It was not born out of a free society where you get the freedom to do whatever the heck you want and then stand on the American principles of, I get freedom as an individual to do what I want here. And like, that is not where Christianity did most of its living and dying up to this country's origins.
Yeah, so I think ultimately what he's pointing to is say that although this isn't inevitable, it shouldn't be a surprise.
Agreed.
And as you see, like, whatever the moral issue of the day, that we should be prepared for what it looks like if someone says signing things like loyalty oaths or like anti-harassment language or things that otherwise in a common society, whether it be to I don't know, the treatment of abortive rights or LGBT rights or like whatever it is, attempts to say, look, we need you to affirm something that you otherwise wouldn't be willing to affirm, and the impact that that has to a society. And I suppose, if this overstates the application, like, I don't know, into captivity you will go, whatever it is, that's just a consequence of what you believe, and you're gonna have to, like, the chips are gonna fall where they may, but they're Jesus's chips, so he's just gonna have to handle that long term one way or the other.
You know, that's where I struggle living in a free society like we do, right? Is like, normally my tact would be, well, you do whatever you want, but I'm not going to do that. You know what I'm saying? And then I'll just go off on, you know, I just won't do that, you know? And so, like, if a workplace said, look, sign this deal, you can't do this and this and this, no Jesus or whatever. And I'd be like, well, I guess I can't work here, right? But, like, a consequence of living in a free society, people will turn around and go, well, I should be able to work here, and I shouldn't have to sign that. And then they start battling it out in court or whatever. And, like, that's the line that I don't know, like, I have a hard time pressing that line sometimes. Sometimes I think it's right and just and good, because frankly, I'd rather see the country that I live in, based on a faith in Jesus Christ. I know that's not the case. And so sometimes I think sometimes we're a little bit loudmouth and whiny, and, you know, you should just take your Christian licks like what it is, and then, just say, look, I guess I don't work here then. And then other times, you know, when it comes to especially rights, you know, like abortion rights, I'm like, good night, we're killing people. You know what I'm saying? That one's probably worth fighting for. You know what I'm saying? So, but it does get into it gets in sticky areas for me. You know, I see a lot of Christians standing on platforms. I'm like, look, man, just take the beating. That's what you're supposed to do. Take it, you know, and then other ones are not quite so much. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. they found some donkey poop, that they feel like might prove the Bible's account of King Solomon.
Oh. Boy, that's got to be an interesting tie.
That's really lasted.
So it says, archaeologists in Israel have made an interesting find that offers further evidence of the accuracy of the Bible's account of ancient history. It's a story in National Geographic that explains that throughout recent decades, researchers have debated the Bible's descriptions of King Solomon and King David's riches and power, as well as the timeline presented in Scripture. But a team recently found donkey dung while exploring an ancient camp that radiocarbon dating indicated was 3,000 years old. The reason why that is significant is that it makes the camp itself much older than the researchers originally believed. In fact, it could provide evidence that Solomon had access to copper mines, which may have been a source of his massive wealth, as described in the Bible. The story gets even more interesting. From the National Geographic, says the dung samples included seeds and pollen spores so intact that Ben Yosef's team was able to determine the animal's diet, which yielded another surprise. The feed was imported from an area more than 100 miles to the north, close to the Mediterranean coast. The distance to Jerusalem is about 190 miles, a two-week trip by donkey in ancient times. So I think they're trying to say that they're importing the food. I think the donkey just travels for a high-end meal.
Maybe the donkey had rabies, and it just ended up there.
The rabid donkey ran to the coast,
running wildly.
This makes it kind of hard to as a Jesus man, you want to grab onto the story and be like, yeah, see, validity of King Solomon. But like, I'm not so sure about radiocarbon dating anyway, because it puts the Earth at like 6 million years old or something. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I dispute that after, say, you know, 2,000 years, that you don't have any proof that that's an actual, it's an accurate trajectory, right? Like, you can say carbon dissipates at X amount in 50 years. So if we drag that out, that means the Earth is blah, 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 blah. Where I would go, all you actually did was prove it decays over 50 years at that rate. Who's to say at year 75 it doesn't take a quick nosedive and starts really going away? You know what I'm saying?
Here it is. You thought this thing was only, say, 1,000 years old and ends up being 3,000. You're off the line anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I mean, I'd like to be excited about this, but, like, I think I have previous qualms with the way they date things anyway. So,
Mike, they found a pile of donkey poop.
I mean, this donkey poop is really going to change my ways.
And it is affirmed what you know from Song of Solomon.
Solomon's riches had to be from the copper mines. Yeah, okay.
Thanks, donkey
like,
crap.
Like, I give a crap where he got this wealth from, right? Who deals it? Was it gold? Gold was the big deal. Like, copper's expensive now because it's rare. But back in the day, I mean, people farted copper. I mean, it was just, it came out of everywhere.
He had to wire the temple. Come on.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you didn't see the mercy seat being made out of copper. So it can't be that big of a deal.
No, that's true. God chose certain materials. And I suppose if copper's not in there, it's a low-rent item.
Although
people wind it out, according to your description.
Yeah.
That's why there's so much now, but it all kind of settled.
Sounds really painful.
Did you find the word fart so offensive that you had to change it to wind out copper?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I don't get those channels at my house. We don't do the YouTube subscription. I use the free version. Okay. All right. Let's see. I had another. There was another article in here that was, are certain prayers just a waste of time? So it was about, like, you know, if you get pulled over and you obviously been speeding and you're like, dear Lord, please do not have, let me get this ticket. Things of this nature. Or, let's see, what was another one? Yeah. Basically, I don't know, silly prayers or prayers to, like, that you feel like are shallow. Let's see. So, like, I'm trying to think.
My prayer life.
I got an awesome one if you want to hear it.
Okay, go ahead, Bubba.
When I was consistently late to church every week, all the time, like my whole life, I would pray that God made all the lights green on my way to church so that I could make it on time, knowing full well that I woke up half an hour after I should have. And then would generally get upset if the red light happened. And I'm like, come on, God. Yeah. I feel like we had an agreement on this deal that church is a good thing. I should be there on time.
This is your like beloved you're making me son, suffer.
There's a lot of stoplights, and you have control. Do you not have control over the stoplights?
Materialize.
Yeah. Jesus, materialize in my passenger seat and change the lights here. And, yeah, that was the beginning of my faith was, all right, God, I don't know why you're not changing these lights. Don't worry about me getting up half an hour later than I should have, but really, I need you to change these lights so I make it to church on time.
So here's the crazy part is I remember the exact day that I gave up on God when I was 13, and it was for something very similar to that, right? Like I was sitting at a cross, an intersection, like a busy road in town on my bike, and I'm like, God, you got to do something about this traffic, man. I've been sitting here for like 10 minutes. This is getting outrageous, you know? And then I thought to myself, God does not care about the problem that you're in, right? And, like, right at that point, I didn't talk to Jesus for, like, 5-10 years. I mean, I was out. I thought, he's not concerned with my day-to-day life. I've been bugging him with these really stupid things for the last 13 years. Like, if God is who he says he is, there is no way he cares that I've been sitting here for 20 minutes. And, like, I bailed. I was done. And I thought, I mean, it's stupid, right? Like, I was a 13-year-old idiot. But like, I've always struggled with that exact question. Like, because the arguments I can buy, right? They're like, pray without ceasing. Well, that means just that covers just about everything, right? You know? But then on the other hand, like, I mean, you're not like, oh, holy God, you know, like, this cheese smells funky. Does this seem right? Send the Holy Spirit to do something so I can tell whether this cheese is any good or not. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, is this within the king's purvey? It is. I mean, he could certainly do it. But, yeah, like, yeah. I don't go asking the Queen of England for crap like that. You know, I'm like, handle the dignitaries and make the place look nice, but I'm not like, you know, I need a raise, queen. Can you talk to my boss? You know, it seems weird in the way that I view royalty, that there's certain things that, like, the king, it's you're not to address the king about, you know? And I can't tell whether that's out of reverence or a false sense of, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I had, what was I reading in Third John this week? It was last week. Anyway, it actually was interesting because, like, 3 John is extremely short. I mean, there's like a chapter. There's not much to it at all. I mean, it looks like he just wrote a letter that someone stole and took a picture of and decided to publish. So anyway, one of the things he opens with, so this is the elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be in good health as it goes well with your soul. And I thought to myself, like, it occurs to me time to time when me and the kids pray at night, we'll pray, hey, I pray, pray grandma feels better, or like someone's, my cough goes away, and I'm like thinking to myself, I'm raising a bunch of kids who are using God as a slot machine, like, fix me with my health. And we should be praying to be persecuted. Lord, send a man with an axe to the door.
So we can stand firm for Jesus.
Maybe witness to him. But those are the things we care about, right? I know grandma. She's not feeling well, and I pray that she would. And then so I read this from John, and like, what's John praying back? He's like, hey guys, man, I hope you're in good health. I hope you're feeling all right. I mean, we've met John. He doesn't seem like a man who needs to be chastised for praying shallow prayers.
No.
This is fine. This is the thing you're praying about is fine, right? Like, you run risk when you're saying, Lord, may you do something that brings glory to me and me alone. Okay, yeah, that's a problem. You're idol worshiping somehow, still talking to Jesus. But, like, other than that, I think you need to be careful about, like, being too hard on yourself about the things, like, you care about it. Jesus cares about it. He's a good father and a good friend, right? I care about stupid things that my kids care about because they care about it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I just don't overdo it with whatever things you're trying to penalize yourself or make yourself feel, ultra heavy and emotional about. Like, you want to pray for grandma or pray for people's good health? Fine. It's a worldly thing. So that's what we live in the world, okay? That's what the nature of healings are about. It's the nature of, like, laying of hands, if you go back to James. Like, these were worldly things. He didn't say, hey, ignore everything about the world around you when it comes to me. Only pray that you may sacrifice and jump into a fire that I may be glorified. That might be part of your life. I ain't telling you, it ain't going to be. But, like, I don't know, just recognize it. Like, that's what James is praying about. That's what John is praying about. Perseverance recognizes external surroundings and said, give us hope in it. And so, I guess I worry less about it.
I think the line that I used where I realized that where it was or where I wasn't doing this right was, like, if someone asked me, what did you talk to Buva about today? And I could say, well, this is the conversation we had, blah, blah, blah. But someone said, what did you pray about? I'm like, I did pray, but
high,
like,
and mighty, lofty things.
Yeah. Or like I prayed, like, 2 second, God, do something about this, and I couldn't remember actually what I had said to him. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't engaging in a conversation in it, but I was just it was a motion thing. It was almost a chant more than anything. Like something I just say. And then I'd say, have I talked to God today? I know I prayed in the car, but I don't have, for the life of me, can't remember what I was praying about. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, well, that's crappy, right? If I can tell people what I talked to Buva about, but if someone asked me what I talked to God about today, and I know legitimately that I did, but I can't remember none of it, that wasn't a legit prayer, right? That's not a conversation with God. That's just me spouting off or thinking out loud. And that wasn't working. Like, I thought that's just not the way to do it.
And that kind of hurts because I can tell you that Buva and I were talking about carrots and caramelized onions. I got a list of things we were talking about, and I don't remember anything about God today.
But you prayed today.
I did.
What was it about, Dan?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. That can't be right. That can't be right.
You guys need to stop putting so much weight under your conversations with me.
Oh, Buba.
Well, not everybody can have like a Jerry the King Lawler screaming match in their truck with Jesus all the time.
No, I definitely don't have that with Jesus all the time. No.
It's funny that you had to roll up the window. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was good, like, this is getting out of hand. Hold on.
You know what the worst part is? Is my window motors don't work. So I had to two-hand it and work my way up this window. So, like, it was not an easy task. It was just, I have a piece of crap old truck, right? Nothing works in that thing.
Hold tight, Sovereign King, while I work this out.
Hey, Jesus, give me a second.
To yell at you.
I'm not done with you, Jesus. Give me
a
second.
Could you raise this window for me,
but
please?
I don't want the people of Clive, Iowa to hear my scream about what I'm dealing with you. You and I need to have this conversation. Right, yeah. I need to have this conversation with the Dunkin' Donuts that I'm passing right now.
Dan's right. Lift this window now, Lord. This is the problem.
This is the exact thing we need to talk about.
Brace yourself. Lord, can you please make my windows work?
And you will answer. This is Buva.
Oh, we have those moments, though.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't forget that light thing from years ago with that church. I was trying to get there.
I hate and I love that I have those moments, but yeah, absolutely.
Forget this. I'm going to poop in the parking lot so people know I existed 3,000 years from now.
I like the copper.
Smell the copper.
We can tell by this boova dung that he argued with the Lord.
It seems agitated and copperish.
He also drove a crap box of a vehicle. This dung smells like exhaust.
This guy says, I think that's one reason I don't pray about everything. I believe I only have so many vouchers to cash in. I shouldn't waste prayer potential on speeding and lottery tickets. It sounds silly when I read it back out loud, but I think it's true, as if somehow an insignificant yes increases the odds for a significant no. I agree to that window thing. No, you cannot have heaviness.
That's right. But your grandma did. Oh, come on.
Man. I don't care about these streetlights anymore.
There are other reasons too, like insecurity or a wrong view of God. But when I believe prayer is solely about outcomes, I act superstitiously. I start out complimenting him because my dad always told me people help people they like, so it can't hurt, right?
Hey, there's some truth in this. I like this man's honesty.
It says, then I usually pray about someone else's need to prove to God and myself that I'm not selfish.
Yep.
All the while wondering when it would be appropriate to transition to my request.
Oh, this guy
totally that is
lives.
Beautiful.
This guy it's lives like, at my house.
God help the poor, bring peace to the nations. Oh, and by the way, if you got some time.
My window really needs to go.
Wow.
It's going
to
rain.
I know that I haven't really put any money away to buy a vehicle or fix this one, but if you want to just, I don't know, have someone give me a truck facing the giant style, like, that'd be really awesome.
This article is way more convicting than I thought it was going to be.
Okay, here we go. At some point, I make the move, and I ask God for what I want. I make sure to include your will be done in some for another.
Yes.
Just to acknowledge I'm a team player. And then I wait, like a high school senior standing by the mailbox for a college acceptance letter. How many others applied? Are my credentials good enough? What if I don't get in? He says, everything I'm describing is why I've struggled with prayer most of my life. I treat it like a slot machine or an obligation. I love the honesty of Herbert McCabe's quote about prayer. He says, people often complain of distractions during prayer. Their mind goes wandering off on other things. This is nearly always due to praying for something you do not really much want. You just think it would be proper and respectable and religious to want it. So you pray high-mindedly for big but distant things like peace on earth. Or you pray that your aunt will get better from the flu when, in fact, you do not much care about these things.
Oh, man.
Perhaps you ought to, but you don't. And so your prayer is rapidly invaded by distractions arising from what you really do want. Promotion at work, let us say. Distractions are nearly always your real wants, breaking in on your prayer for edifying but bogus wants. If you are distracted, trace your distraction back to the real desires it comes from and pray about those. When you are praying for what you really want, you will not be distracted. People on sinking ships do not complain of distractions during their prayer.
Yeah. Boy, that's dead on.
Wow.
So.
Holy cats.
What's he, I mean.
Well, let me see if he makes a point here.
Give us some hope here.
It wasn't until I started believing prayers about wanting what God wants more than getting what I want that I was able to pray for any extended period of time. I still don't talk to God about everything, but we have started talking more about little things, sometimes silly things, mainly just because I want to talk to him. I feel better when we're done talking, not better about my odds. I actually don't think much about the odds anymore. I feel better about myself. I feel better about the things that were stressing me out or making me feel afraid. If I care about the things the people I love care about, how much more does my Heavenly Father? I just said that. Praying about everything is not about getting everything I want. I think it's more about bringing everything to Him. I'm not built to carry it all, but He is, and no thing is too small for Him. Oh, man. He kind of really nailed me, and then I
think he nailed everybody.
Oh,
I mean, that's right on.
Well, I have like almost counted in my head. Okay, bless the missionaries, blah, blah,
right?
Blah, like, and then to like, okay, that's enough.
Okay,
what I really need,
bring in the day.
Right? I've got this toe fungus.
Go from macro to micro in your list. All right. God help the world, and then help specifically this country, and then
you're
its
wonderful
leaders.
And awesome.
Oh, I feel like my entire prayer life has been reading off of someone else's prayer journal.
That one, the one thing he missed that I'm extremely guilty of is like I use prayer as a reason to not, it's to not do something I don't want to do. Right? Like if I'm in bed and I don't want to get up, I'm like I gotta pray.
I gotta pray real quick.
Yeah. Or like I'm in the shower and it's super warm. And I'm like it's not time to get out yet. And that's a good time.
Hey God, you want to talk? Conditioner.
Yeah, time to talk to Jesus. Finish up this prayer. That's terrible.
You done the dishes yet? Nope, talking to Jesus.
Nope, in the middle of Jesus talking. So what was the synopsis here? What was the way to, because I'm really interested to move past that quoted part.
Yeah, he went back to, well, but God likes the little things, so.
Yeah. So it's not praying about
what he wanted, and he started really worrying about or praying for what God wanted.
Yeah, except for what he, like, ultimately he's saying, what God wants is for you to talk to him about your stuff. Right? Without the expectation, like, yeah, he could do that. I mean, that seems a little bit shifty. That's like making it sound to your rich uncle. You're like, yeah, you know, I'm just a few hundred dollars short for the car. Like, I'm not just telling that story out of random.
Right.
Really, I want my uncle to give me a couple hundred bones.
I wonder if it's like, okay, my daughter is in college right now and doesn't really have a job, and college is expensive, you know, all the whole stuff.
Yeah.
And she is so careful to not, like, ask for things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she overly tries. To the point where I'm like listening to see if she needs anything.
Right.
You know, and then I'll say like, well, I can help you with, oh, no, that, you know, it's almost like maybe that's the posture of I'm not here begging for stuff. I'm just here letting you know what's going on in my life. And as a father, I'm like, well, I want to help you.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so the radar is on. But I don't know, somewhere in there was,
well, I like it, cause like that sort of eliminates the quarrelsomes around your will be done. Cause like, if I'm going to pray to God and say, hey, I pray that your will is done, the logical response was, well, yeah. Like, that's the point of my will.
You're right. It's my will.
Things you don't need to say. I've got those under control. But like, it would be like, in your example, the father's going to do what he wants to do, right? So, like, if you go, hey, I'm going to help you out in this. And you're like, oh, no. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do what I want here. You don't have to ask for me to do what I want. I will do what I want. I'm the father.
Sometimes I'll just throw an extra, you know, I mean, like, $25 is huge to a college student.
Yeah, right.
I'll just transfer $25 over, say, text her, give you $25. What for? You're in college. Figure you needed it.
Hey, if any of you guys want to do that, just let me know.
We'll have to hook our bank accounts.
Like, you can text me and just say, hey, Boova, send you $25. I'm like, hey, yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. $25 towards a new trap.
That thing that he's saying about when you're praying about stuff that's really important to you, that couldn't be any more right. Right? Okay. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, when I'm praying for something that's very important to me, not only is the prayer not full of distractions, but, like, even the outcomes I surrender to him pretty well, right? I will usually say, this is how I'm feeling about this, and I either need some peace about this, or I need this to move in a direction, and I need to know you're doing it. Either way is fine with me, but I need some peace about this. It's tearing me up, you know. And like, that's a legit prayer, right? Like, you're God, you do God things. I'll let you be God. I just need you to give me peace about whatever you're doing, right? And so, like, when I'm praying about something very heavy, that is exactly how I pray. But when, like, the nighttime fluff before I'm passing out, I'm like, well, you know, if you could just keep an eye on the church and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know what? I don't really care about that. You know, I'm just.
Do you ever get amazed, though, at the complete insane things where your mind drifts in the middle of a prayer and you're like, how did I get here?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about the wheat by Lake Anita. I'm like, what? What? Yeah. I mean, I don't.
The what?
That's my point. Also, like, that's not on my radar.
Did you say wheat?
I did say. I'm just telling. That's my point. It's like, it's insane.
Dad's mind
is
not explorable at this time.
Sometimes I think, I have no idea how I got there, and it has nothing to do with anything in my life right now, but I'm thinking about some dorky thing somewhere, and I'm talking to the God of the universe.
I've actually, it's occurred to me that I'm under attack by a demonic presence in some time like that, because I think to myself, hey, there's no reason to be thinking this type of thing. Why am I so distracted? Evil spirits are after me.
Yes.
That's not been founded. No. That's an unreasonable thought. But I'm just saying, it has occurred to me. But that was also the same time where my mind was wandering, so I thought, well.
Yeah.
Sitting there praying about something serious, then it's like, man, is Nessie real? Like,
yeah, right.
Is that one of the things you created, Lord?
Should I buy a Wii? Man. Maybe I should get a Wii. What?
I hear there's some out in Lake Anita.
It's everywhere.
All right.
I feel like I'm going to print that quote out. What's his name? Herbert? What's his name?
Was it McCabe? Hold on. Herbert McCabe's quote about prayer.
Yeah. I like to print stuff like that out just to know that I'm not fooling anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like to put that stuff somewhere where I can see it and go, the Lord's not fooled by you. And I'm like, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
We're going to have to add that one to our mirror of confrontational things you have to realize every morning.
Yeah, you know what we should do? Because that app that you could, you know, say where it says "Do not trust this man." That's the same app that should show you and then the materialized Jesus right next to you.
Jesus, materialize,
materialize, and he shows up and goes, "I'm on to you. Stop phoning in your prayers."
How would you say something you really care about instead of talking about the wheat?
Now you know I love you because this is what I did to Paul.
I love the grains.
You're not on your way to Damascus, but I still showed up.
This app was developed once before when Noah made it just before the flood.
All right. You're listening to life. Hope that's never a subsection of Christianity where we're like, hey, man, we used to have all the same technology before the flood. It's like, oh. Come
on. He's laser engraving the ark.
We made a big deal about all the animals. They have some kind of mind control device that just makes them walk.
It was probably made with a 3D printer in the first place.
He's got like a floodwaters of 400 BC. Right?
Big old line. Gopher Woods, a mistranslation. We just didn't know the actual material that was used in their 3D printers.
How many animals you need to create more animals once you get off the ark? Just send me a couple of each. Should be fine.
That's crazy. It all got washed away in the flood, or Noah was drunk and crashed the boat, and either way, everybody's gone.
You're listening to Live from the Path.
Could have been a steam engine boat.
Yes. Steampunk Noah.
That's why they haven't found it. You know what I'm saying? That dung, that copper, is probably from the motor that was running the boat.
Exactly. That was part of a huge onboard mower for the motor for the Ark.
People always try to prove the wrong things.
It's got a bunch of lines like running a treadmill action there, keep the thing a churn.
Exactly. Noah's like, that was actually animal powered.
That's why we took 7 birds. All right. Let's see. You're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far tonight. All right, Bova. So bring us to a synopsis of what this deal is. Why are you yelling at the Lord Jesus?
All right. So, putting it all into a bundle for you. A lot of responsibility recently. I feel like when I have a lot of stuff good that's going on, I always kind of get attacked in this weird way where I feel like I'm not good enough for the responsibility God's given me. I'm not good enough for the good things that are going on in my life, and it's all going to crumble and completely crush me. And so I was in tears talking to somebody about this and how scared I was to even make a move because I kept thinking that, you know, if I take on anything else, I'm going to fail it, or if I do anything else, it's just all going to come crashing down on me, right? And then I got reminded of this amazing thing that is so true and important that it was something almost stupidly simple of, no matter what I'm doing and no matter what responsibilities God's gotten me in and what good things are going on, even if I do fail, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things because God still wins. And even if I, being a messed up human being that very easily could screw up a lot of things, like if I screw up a lot of things that are going on, that does not change that God is king and that Jesus is king and he wins and he doesn't fail. And even if I do something, that doesn't mean that I'm falling from his grace, and that doesn't mean that I'm not called one of his children. It's insignificant to think of the outcomes that are going to happen. All I need to do is focus on what I'm doing day in. And it comes back to our be faithful in me, God will handle the end thing. It's the truth is I was seriously in a place where I was crippled and couldn't move because I was so scared of the ends. But that's not what God calls me to do. God calls me to trust him and just do what I need to do now. If I'm scared about college, do my friggin' homework, right? Like, that's right. All I got to do. If I'm scared about what my future is going to look like, well, just prepare for it. So do your homework. Do good on tests. Study. Don't do stupid things. Like, stay away from bad situations and generally love on your lady and you're going to be fine. And continue to build your relationship with Christ. And then that's really all you got to do. And I get that I'm oversimplifying that, but it's the truth. It's
not really, though. You know, that's pretty simple.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's straightforward.
Right. It's like, I get that I can screw certain things up, but like, I still have a basic idea of what the roadmap is. And yeah, I may not know where I'm going to be in. Pretty sweet life, and I'm excited about the things that Jesus has done and the stupid stuff I've done. But yeah, and it was this weird feeling of like I'm screaming at God about like how mad I am that he's given me responsibilities even though he knows I'm afraid that I'm going to fail it, and that how mad I am that that God has given me the opportunity to be influential in some way for him, yet I don't deserve that, and I'm angry and yelling, and then it just kind of hits me where I'm just like, dude, shut up. Just shut it. Just stop yelling. Literally, all you're yelling about is how awful you are and thinking that God can't cover it.
Lord, I want to worry about tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
I told you not to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I'm sitting here like, God, I'm so bad and I'm fallible and I think I could fall and all this sort of stuff. And
I want to be eloquent like Moses.
Yeah, exactly. Wait. Right. I'm just like, I could screw so many things up. And he's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
I still. Yeah, exactly. I knew.
Isn't that enough to worry about?
I knew what you could screw up when I handed it to you, but I still handed it to you. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, stop yelling at me, man. Like, you're mad at yourself. And so it was this weird thing where I just kind of had to be reminded of, there really is no failure in Christ in that manner. It's just, it's ultimately like, it was this weird freeing thing where I'm like, dude, just shut your mouth. Stop it. You are trying to take on stuff that you don't even have to take on, and you're already worried about failing the stuff you have, yet you're saying, hey, God, I'm going to fail this stuff. By the way, can I have six other things that I feel like I'm also going to fail?
That's
like, how stupid am I? And so it was this weird screaming fit and Clive running past Dunkin' Donuts and rolling up my window with both hands, and I went from screaming and crying to I giggled. Like, I straight up, I laughed like... I haven't laughed in a long time. I'm like Santa Claus bowl full of jelly laughing in my truck because I'm just like, as I'm saying this out loud, how dumb do I sound that I'm just like, Dad, I'm so mad at you for all these things you're giving me. I'm going to take a couple more though because I feel like I need those too, but I'm going to fail those too. And then it made me just crack up laughing. And I had to be, it reminded me that I'm just like, dude, seriously, you are so worried about things that are not yours to worry about. You are so scared for things that you shouldn't be fearful of. They shouldn't even be in your mind. All you need to worry about is the fact that God has got you, and you've got to do that every day. That's all you have to do. Focus on Him, and that's it. Today has got today. Shut up about tomorrow. You don't know what time things are going to happen. You've got a general idea, but all of that could change. Just look at today. Look at the steering wheel in front of you, and don't get in a car accident because you're screaming about stupid stuff. Drive home. Go to bed. Wake up tomorrow morning. Ask me what's next. And I'm just like, all right. That sounds awesome. And I'm sitting here praying for peace, and I'm like, dude, I literally have had it. I've had that peace sitting there, and God's just been holding it in front of me, just like, dude, literally, stop looking at tomorrow, look at today, and I've got it right in front of you.
Didn't you say there was a song involved?
Oh, here's the thing. It was Yes, Jesus Loves Me, the whole Jesus Loves Me thing. Like, I started singing that.
I was wondering where that was going to come in, because you were like, I thought it was going to be like a song from my youth where it's like, shut up. Stop worrying about stuff. I'm like,
that was gonna be a Barney song. Yeah, I'll be honest.
Yes. No, it was the Yes, Jesus Loves Me, and it was specifically that chorus of Yes, Jesus Loves Me, Yes, Jesus Loves Me, Yes, Jesus Loves Me. That because the Bible tells me so, right? And all I could think of was that, and I'm just like, yeah, I guess I forgot about that, and like, it's so simple because that love extends to the peace that He can offer me and the joy that He offers me and the fact that He's not giving me my responsibilities for tomorrow. He's only allowing me to have today. And I keep asking Him to tell me what's next when I would stress about it anyway. And so if He told me that I'm going to be dead next year, all I'm going to do is sit in this year and go, oh, what can I do about it? And I'm going to be so scared that I'm not actually going to do anything. Or if He told me, hey, you're going to be in North Korea next year, right? Like, I don't know. All I would do is worry about that rather than just being like, all right, God, today, this date, what do I do now? Okay, I got it. Let's do that. I'm going to go to school. If somebody asks me about you, I'm going to talk about you. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to do my homework. And then if it comes up, let's talk about you and let's show who you are today. And then tomorrow morning, I'm going to wake up and do the same thing. If you got something else, let me know tomorrow. That's all it is.
You telling that story, all I can think of is like God sitting on His throne right in this beautiful throne room. And here come Boova just, I mean, grinning ear to ear, walking into the throne room with worry all over his boots. You know, and God the Father's like, oh, come on, you're bringing that stuff in here. Jesus, go talk to him. And Jesus is like, all right, Boova, come here. Now listen, I told you, you can't bring them worry-covered boots in here. He don't like it.
The water is still his glass for a reason. Stop it.
Just, and Boova just as happy as could be with his worry boots on. Hey, God, oh, come on.
I told you to take those off, Boova.
Stay out of here with that.
I sent the spirit to come live with you so you don't come around here like this. And you still found the place.
You get one day to come here. That's it. Not
Ezekiel
now.
Just swept in here.
Do you have six wings? And you're not allowed to do the throne. Okay? You
don't mean... what do I see? Two eyes? Not nearly enough.
That's enough. You got a spinning wheel for arms? What you got? Nothing. None of that? Get out of here.
Yeah, you look like you belong down there.
Is that just one face? No.
How many emotions can you show with that? You can only sing holy, holy, holy with one mouth? That is ridiculous.
I made that He-Man with the spinning eye as an example, and no one takes it.
Uzziah's been dead for years. You're not allowed in here unless Uzziah has died.
Where's the coal? Someone get him the coal.
I'm a man of unclean boots. Take him off. Bring that worry in here. Here's the deal, Bubba. It's the hardest thing, right? It's the hardest thing to start seeing the world. You say, God, let me see the world the way you see it. But then we overdo it. We take on too much. We look at the world and we say, oh, how will I help the pygmy, the poor pygmy man who lives in a life of derision and the political incorrect jokes at his expense. And so you worry about it, right? It's not your deal.
Right, exactly.
It's like that stuff is not, it's not within your control, right? Like, I can be faithful in, when we say faithful in means, I mean literally the means of which you are presented with or which you have control over.
Right.
And that means tomorrow is not within your control because you cannot just make it tomorrow if you didn't want to, right? The Lord still has to roll the sun around the joint,
yep.
Job style, and then it will show. So in the meantime, you have whatever means are in front of you, and those are the ones you're called to be faithful in. And to try to retain such an open look at the world that says, let me see and love like God loves in these means right now, without otherwise taking the rest of the world in and putting things that are God's upon your shoulders, is very difficult. Because it feels right. It feels right. Like I should worry about this guy from way over there who I've never met in my life, but someone might have a machete at his house. And so, like, you worried about it, but it's just not your thing. It's like, right. God, you're going to have to be God, and I'm going to have to be me, and you are well aware of the limitations of which you have put upon my life, so let me be faithful within those limitations. And here's the thing. A lot of our progress, if you want to think of it this way, it gets caught up in our planning for things that we have no control over.
Right.
Like our ability to posture or otherwise make, say, if we do this, XYZ will follow. And I don't think that's, you can be faithful in means that otherwise points to longer ends. It's okay, right?
Like, right.
You don't need to spend all your money today necessarily and be like, Lord, I was faithful because you were not. But like, the point is that like, we're constantly saying, if I do this, God will provide this or God will pay it off in this way. When like, we had means that we were to be faithful in that day right in front of us that we completely missed because we were looking beyond them. And that just simply isn't our worldview. We can't even handle that much. There's the things I can't handle. I can't handle worries beyond today, and I can't handle the entire concept of justice. That's why both of those things sit upon God. I do love and I do right now, and that's my responsibility. I deal in true things, and so that's the thing, is fighting for the right perspective and looking around. It's a real micro way to live, but that's what creates macro things, because then God handles ends that are amazing, and we just get to sit back and go, oh, look what God did with that
right
thing that I barely did anything on, and say, well, God is the one that does that. He's the one that can make those types of things, as opposed to whatever limitation that I plotted for. And keeping from worrying beyond that is hard. But it postures control over life that we don't have. And it's a wrong understanding of our ability to change the world as opposed to God's ability to change the world. But it's hard. It's hard because it seems right, right? Like I'm concerned about XYZ, or I want to change XYZ, and so I attempt to exert my influence beyond my ability, as opposed to saying, I know what God can do, let me just turn it over to Him and I'll pack the box today. I'll feed the man today and do whatever it is I can and watch God multiply with it as He sees fit.
You know, even Jesus, before going to the cross, said, you know, I have accomplished everything the Father has sent me to do, you know, in so many words. It's like there's a lot of things that didn't get done.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
You know, there's still a lot of people around that pool waiting to get healed.
Yeah, right, right. He just did one guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He did the one.
He did 12 disciples, healed one guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, right. He had stuff that he was supposed to do. That was in his point of view. So that's what got done.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. It's got to be rough, right? You're getting ready to go to the cross. Your main man, guy's going to take over the thing, takes out a sword and whacks an ear off a guy while you're trying to get your deed done. You're like,
yeah,
I can't influence.
They're not
anything.
Ready.
Maybe I shouldn't go.
Yeah,
I already did the big prayer though.
Give me one more year.
Last day on the job, and you see your replacement. He's a 21 year old nose picker coming in. You're like, oh, no, man. Oh. It's going to go down.
Where's he even keeping that sword? I feel like I would have saw it when it came in.
Actually,
it's like a dagger.
I kind of wonder, where's the dagger? Because, yeah. I mean, that tunic don't leave much for hiding. You know what I'm saying? You would accidentally scathe yourself into man nipples or whatever. And like, oh, man. I don't know what these things look like, but seriously, people would see the sword. You know, it's not like it's well hidden.
It's like a scabbard. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a...
What do you mean?
A three-course thing?
What I'm saying. Yeah, I'm fluent in scabbard. Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know where I heard that.
Isn't the scabbard the sheath?
Yeah, isn't that what it's held in?
Yeah, the scabbard is the sheath, not the sword.
I was hoping to get away with that. I thought I'd just throw out a word and see what happened.
Well, you said you know what I mean after saying it.
I know. I was trying to validate whether it's accurate.
Listen to me. Getting your ear cut off with a legit sword had to hurt, but someone cutting your ear off with a sheath of a sword...
I mean, that's someone being inconsiderate, man. That's someone going, hold on a minute.
Can you imagine Peter just whacking this man repeatedly with the scabbard?
Until blunt force trauma removes his appendage.
That's true. We didn't get the whole discussion. Jesus is like, Peter, that wasn't even effective. I'm just going to put that back.
Peter, that took way too long.
Yeah.
Stop trying to make this about you. Put his ear back on.
Tighten up on your job, homie. All right,
Mike. I'm leaving in like 2 days, man. Come on.
All right, Dan's got some Pope style. Dan, someone has mistaken Dan Hudson for the Pope.
It happens all the time.
It was me.
Pope Hudson, give you some advice or no people aren't going to leave your lawn.
That'd be awful. That'd be terrible.
I'm trying to grow grass out here.
Yeah, exactly. There's dog poop everywhere. You best leave.
So here's the deal. A few years ago, I got all excited about the shooting sports, right? I got myself a gun and got the training and got the carry license and all that stuff. And the training is kind of a fun thing. You just sit there and shoot at targets, and there's no guessing how well you're doing. I mean, it's right there, right. You know. And I was never like, you know, super duper marksman or anything, but I always felt pretty good about it. I mean, you know, I could hit a target get a nice little cluster. And something happened a couple years ago, and all of a sudden, like I was doing awful. I mean, just terrible. Like. Not even hitting the target. Like the piece of paper was like, you know, what, 11 by, you know, like a piece of paper, notebook paper or something. And I wouldn't even hit the paper. Before I could do pretty good. And all of a sudden I'm like hitting just nothing. And I went with my daughter one day, this is like a couple years ago, and she was bam, bam, bam. She was hitting right in there. And I went, well, you're doing a good job. And I'm hitting nothing. And I can't even figure out how to adjust it because I don't know where I'm hitting. You know, I don't know if I'm high or low or, you know, right or left. And it was just terrible. And a couple of years go by, and I haven't shot much at all lately. I just you know, kind of like I figured the gun was bad, or maybe my eyes are going bad. I'm getting old. It's, you know, I couldn't figure it out. And we went back last week, last Monday, I think it was. It doesn't matter when. Someday, Tuesday. And I was shooting, and I thought, okay, I've had a couple year break. It's going to be fresh, you know. Same thing. Just. It was a bigger target, though. It was like a life-size one.
Yeah.
With a cutout of a dude. And I'm shooting at it and going, okay, this is me. Because at least now I could see where I was hitting.
Right.
If someone came to my house and I had to pull a weapon, he was going to definitely need a hip replacement.
Right on.
I'm aiming at the heart. There's like a cluster on the hip. I'm going, okay, so then I adjusted, so I'm aiming like way over his head to the right of his shoulder. So at least I was getting a few in the center ish. But even then, it's awful. It's terrible. Shoot up my ammo. And I'm all done. I'm like, I'm disgusted. I'm gonna sell my gun.
This is it.
Gonna get me a sheath.
A scabbard. Start attacking people with a scabbard.
I don't even know what it is. And a buddy's with me, and he gives me some ammo, and he goes, come on, keep shooting. And then he watches me for like two rounds or whatever. No big deal. Pulls me aside for 15 seconds. He goes, there's two things. One, your support arm's wacky.
Mm-hmm.
It was guys hanging out rather than actually supporting. And two, you're pulling the trigger too quick. It's supposed to be smooth. And I'm like, I don't know how visually you could even tell.
Right.
So like, okay, process that for a second, put some ammo in there, and right on target. Just all of a sudden, both the heart and the head were just gone.
Right.
I was just totally right on.
You become the outlaw Josie Wales. Like, you're on it.
Exactly. I'm in negotiation with the Army right now for some sniper. But I just thought, you know, he goes, you just got lazy. Like, you knew what to do. You know, you had the training. You know what to do. And you either forgot, you got lazy, whatever it was, I don't know. But I couldn't figure it out. I was blind to it. Yeah,
right.
No idea. And it just reminded me how important it is to have people in your life walk alongside you who can observe and say, dude, you're getting lazy here, as a brother, you know, and not in a judgmental way. It was just like, this will help you.
Right.
And he totally, like, completely changed what was going on. I know that's just shooting. That's just target. But I think, man, the spiritual life, that is so true. You get a little bit lazy. You start praying about Wheat and Anita. Because and
you're even at the range, right? Like, it's not – you didn't even bail on the range. You're out there shooting.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're doing all the right stuff.
Yeah, right.
But just incorrectly. A little bit lazy, a little bit half-hearted, a little something, whatever it was. Well, just a little bit off.
Right.
Yeah. And you completely miss the target being just a little bit off. And I thought, how often have I completely missed the target of what Jesus called me to do because I'm doing other stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Going through the actions. Anyway, that was my thing. I thought, man, it's just good to have people in your life that can observe you and say, hey, here, walk alongside you and stride with you in the faith.
Yeah, and that's a great example, right? Because most of the time when it's a 50-50, folks will offer that to people, and they're like, I wasn't really actually interested in doing better.
Yeah,
I was
kind of okay.
I was okay with just kind of hitting a target, you know, somewhere in his hip. I was cool with
like
that,
the hip,
you know. And so, like from a ministry standpoint, like that has to be brutal, right? You're not you didn't the guy didn't pull you aside, slap you in the face, and say, "Do better, Dan." And you're like, "Well, I'm doing the best I can. And I still suck," right? You know, he did it in the right way, and you accepted it and took that and made it exactly what it needed to be. And
it's
everybody
unbelievable
won.
The difference.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just unbelievable. I was just like, how in the world? And I, even I could barely tell the difference on pulling the trigger. I just kind of, just smoothly, just kind of, and I thought, bam, direct right there. It was amazing to me.
Do you think it's like, sometimes I, like that's where the closing statements from sermons usually come in, right? Like here's the thing you need to take with you. Like, sometimes folks just need something to focus on, just even if it's a small thing, just something to focus on. So like by Wednesday or Thursday when I'm getting beat up again, I'd be like, what's the thing I was supposed to focus on? Okay, great. Puts me back into perspective, right? It just gets your mind one click away from where it was and back to where it came from. And like, not to say that you need to add a cheesy tagline at the end of your sermon or whatever, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes I do this a lot actually, is I'll talk to people about Jesus and I'll give them this huge scope of grace and you know, and sacrifice. I do this with my kids all the time and they fade into gray and stop listening to me. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just giving them something that they can hold on to and walk with, even if it's just one thing, you know what I'm saying? And makes all the difference in the world. And like, well, maybe that is something to think about. Is like when you're trying to purvey a life of Christ to people who don't know Him, you know, you don't have to start with the Amalekites. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Just you hit them with Boova's Jesus Loves Me, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And don't let it go. Just stare them in the face and be like, no, seriously, you need to realize that. Like, I know you're like, Jesus loves me. Yeah, yeah, I get it. I don't think you quite get it. Like, every bit of you, even the gross parts that you don't even tell me about, right? Those are the parts He loves you. You know. And so, like, that's a great story.
I think, yeah, and I think, like, one of the important things there is the openness and having people around you, right? Like,
us living in community.
Yeah, right. Just, like, and with that, with the intention that, or the expectation that people will do that, right? Like, you can't be offended on things that you ask for. If I tell, in fact, I had to do this today. I had to, I had to reach out to a group of people and provide them feedback on something that they hadn't really asked for. It was kind of assumed that I would do things like this, but like they hadn't really asked for it, and like I of course had to worry about it because I had to worry, how are they going to accept it, right? But like it's significantly different. Just like people can't steal from you things that you give. Right? You can't steal it if you're giving it away, but you cannot be harmed by feedback that you asked for. If you say, look, I want you to be honest because I want it to make me a better person. I want to help. I want to see where I'm off. Right. And like, it's not even a crazy big thing here. Like, it doesn't mean someone's going to say, hey, you're the worst person ever. Right. But like someone to just look at you and say, hey, you know, I was over at your place and you were harsh with your wife. And it sounded like you were joking and maybe that's a thing for you, but like, you know, you should give that up.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yeah.
You know, say, and like, the things that we can accept, not intentionally, but simply because we don't know the difference, right? Like, you get a little blind to our own stuff and you realize what you are missing. It's crazy what you get used to. It's crazy what can become acceptable to you, not because you lowered your bar, but because your bar faded and you just didn't know the difference. What was, there was a sermon example Dan gave, it was in Hebrews. I was just like 6 or 7 years ago. It was a long time ago, but it had to do with
the drifting.
Being the drifting, yeah.
You don't know
how far you've gone, and you just it's not because you didn't row away. That was just where you were.
Yeah.
And like that's a really strong image If you've got someone staying at the shore who's like, no, actually, you're quite a bit farther away. You need to change course. And you're like, thanks for that guy at the beach.
Right.
And so, living around people, living intentionally, wanting that type of thing, because there's not pride involved with saying, hey, don't tell me that I stink. I mean, you're missing the target. Everyone else
saw
us.
We can all see you stink.
That's right. You might as well at least live openly so someone can help you.
That's right. We'd like to talk about it in front of you instead of just behind your back. So if you could just own up to this thing now.
Yeah. Isolation is bad. Community is good. Help refine what you got going on. Right on. All right, get off Dan's lawn. He's trying to grow dandelions or something. Hey, man, I've killed a bunch of weeds in my yard. I sprayed at the end of last year because I got Creeping Charlie. Mm. And I talked to a man that I met at the coffee shop. We shared a table, this man and I. And I say, he works at a lawn service. And he says, first you got to kill the Creeping Charlie, and then you got to plant grass so that it doesn't come back. And I say, great. So I get towards the end of the fall, early winter, and it's still pretty warm out. And so I spray all the Creeping Charlie. And I thought, well, I can't put the grass down yet because I spray a bunch of chemicals and stuff everywhere. And then by the time that I get ready to where I can plant the grass, it starts to freeze over and I can't plant the grass. And so now I got a bunch of dead brown lawn everywhere at my house, and I cannot seem to resuscitate it back to life. And that seemed relevant at the time when I started to tell that story, but I do not recall why.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Ben.
Oh, I was thinking about Dan's Dandelions. There we go.
I actually met a guy at the gas station today. I ran into him three separate times, like once at the warmer, and then I went over to the soda, and he was over to soda, and then I was heading towards the counter or whatever, and he kind of ran into me again, and he was a gruff-looking fellow, and I said, maybe we should just hold hands and go through the store together. And he smiled for just a second, and then he wasn't smiling anymore. And
I thought,
that was the longest amount of patience he has for me. So I can't run into him again. That was the end.
Okay. All right, Mike, we got one dear life from the path.
Okay. Dear life from the path. Blah, 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 blah. Dear life from the path. I plan on studying abroad sometime in my college career. This is probably the only opportunity I will ever have to live in another country for months at a time, and I have set my sights on a small town in South Africa. Upon mentioning my wishes to one of my friends, she exclaimed that she has been wanting to go on this program, too, for the same period of months. I wanted this trip to be complete immersion in another culture with no safety net of friends, so I do not want to go if we both get accepted. What should I say to, quotes Katie, about my complete 180? No more in Syracuse, New York.
Well, it sounds like there's a group going.
I don't think
it's like a program, right?
Yeah, but
so there's going to be other Americans there.
Well, yeah,
right.
Not it's just not, your friend, like you. Someone else will be there.
Yeah, it's not like when you, as soon as you step on the plane, you know that you're going to be surrounded by Sengalis until you get there.
start knocking on the hut doors. Hey, can I stay here for 9 months?
Could be a bunch of people from Ohio. Like,
they're going to be a bunch of fat white guys on that same plane.
You know, I won't be there.
Yeah, what not move? Pull 30, bro.
I mean, pick. Can you go and then just pick a different South African town? Certainly, there's one within a few miles.
I mean, would it be wrong to discriminate against your own people once you get there? And be like, don't look at me.
Don't speak to me, Katie.
I'm not here for you. I think it's kind of selfish. I thought he was there to serve.
No, he's there to immerse, take from the culture.
Yeah,
he's the standard white man.
He's going to study abroad. This is his giant way of trying to justify his own American ways.
Deepening my own self here.
I feel cultural because I lived where someone lives their whole life for a month or two, and then I got to go back to Facebook.
Can't wait till I get air
conditioning.
That's
exactly what happens. Like, you watch guys give speeches that are like, you know, in the time that I spent in South Africa, as I'm currently talking to you in $300 slacks.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I was in a poor village, and I learned this about pottery making. I'm like, will you shut up? You're not credible. You know, those same people that do that kind of crap end up moving to South Africa.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They live there, or they end up in some weird hut in Alaska. Either way, they take it for what it's worth, and they're like,
happens.
I love this, and this is what I'm going to do.
I'm going
to
South Africa in like 2 months.
Dan, are you going there as a white man? Or are you going there as a man that's there to serve?
I'm there to serve.
Okay, right on.
But I plan to go back.
If you come back, Mike will judge you. If you don't move into an Alaskan kid.
I need $300 slacks.
Don't tell me any stories on how you understand their culture, because I ain't going to buy it.
I understand they were upset at my pants.
I showed up with my smartphone and took pictures of them. They loved it.
Yeah.
I said, I'll remember you forever. So I posted on my Instagram.
Who's that guy? Just some dude I met.
In a village.
Yeah. See how they're still wearing pleated khakis over there? That's lame.
So a members-only jacket?
They actually tend to dress better than us there. I was quite shocked. The villagers, even.
What do you mean?
Because it's the British influence.
That's all they've got.
Yeah. And then they wear ties and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, I gotta wear a tie? It's like, yeah. Anyway, sorry. I've made this about me.
A good point. Like, I have a hard time with that. I could never imagine going to a culture that dresses fancier than we dress. Like, I would be offensive to them, right? Like, I would rather go to a rundown village where I think I would fit in better.
Right. My buddy was speaking at like, it's a preacher conference, so equipping other preachers, right? And you're going across the world, so you don't try to, you know, you pack light. And so, but they wanted, like, suit coats. So, like, the head dude there gave him a suit coat, but it was too small for my buddy. And so he would hold it on his arm, so it was like he had his coat.
Right.
and so they could respect him.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, dude, I'm glad we had this conversation because I was not seeing that.
That's right. Boy, that would be so awkward to be
in a leisure suit, Dan. You're gonna have to take some with you,
like a smoking jacket and a sport coat.
Mr. Hot South Africa wearing a sports coat. I'd be like, this just seems so silly.
There was a dude there. He said that had a parka on. It was 170 degrees. 107 degrees. He was wearing a parka. He's like 95 years old, and he's like, why is this guy wearing a parka? He goes, gentlemen have no weather.
Hey, man, that's the most Bond thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
He says it has to be the British influence.
Hey, gentlemen have no weather.
Can you pin that on an urban gentleman? An urban gentleman has no weather.
An urban gentleman has no weather. Wow. He wears whatever needs to at exactly the right time.
Dang.
All right, print that one out, too.
All right. Oh, man.
Put that next to the
hashtag urban gentleman. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't travel anymore, so I watch a bunch of travel documentaries, right? But I was actually astonished because there was a thing that I was watching about. It was either South Africa or another country in Southern Africa, and where they were talking about if they get any amount of money, they'll take care of their most basic needs, and then we'll spend a little bit to get a brand new pair of type of clothing, whether it's a brand new shirt or a brand new pair of pants or a brand new pair of shoes. And it was literally their only thing they could hold on to have any amount of pride.
Yeah.
And so, because the houses they lived in or the places they lived in and the lack of education they may have and all this different stuff, they don't have those points of pride where people in America could very easily cling to those things. All they had was a clean shirt, and all they had was clean socks or a nice pair of pants that wasn't ripped up, and that was their point of pride within their culture. And yeah. It's just crazy.
That's something.
Yeah.
I was blind to that.
Mm-hmm. You're right. That's stuff to know before you get over there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Secular says...
Wait, so what was our advice?
Oh, yeah.
Stop being selfish. Realize that you're not going to have a total cultural immersion for a month and a half and then come back to the United States. Don't hold on to that like you're going to be a better person because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is it wrong to go... Like, would I not consider myself... If my wife and I went over somewhere for 6 weeks or something, would I not consider me culturally immersed just because someone was with me? Like, it requires a singular person?
Yeah, you don't want safety nets. Like, it's just this weird, like, throwing away everything because you want to forsake everything, but only for a little while.
Right. You want a Jason Bourne your way over there. Like, you belong in all cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't.
No, you don't.
Like, no, you do not.
I get that you don't want to be a tourist. You don't, like, you want to
spend more than a week there. You won't be a tourist.
Yeah, exactly. You want to have realistic experiences. All right. Well, don't stay in the 5-star hotel and eat where everyone else eats. And
exactly.
You're going to be fine.
Don't refuse the food unless you know it's actually going to hurt you.
Yeah, and if Katie's your friend, I mean, it's an unfamiliar territory. It'd be nice if she had someone she knew there.
Yeah.
Is there just a chance that you don't like Katie as much as you think you do?
Yeah.
Now, this is studying, right? It's not like I was thinking like Peace Corps or something.
This is studying abroad for college.
So then who...
Do your schoolwork when you're there. Worse. Get a chance to eat food you like and whatever.
No, lighten that's up. A good point. You're doing school.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way you're the only white person there.
Right. Yeah, they don't pick one white person. And by the way, you're going to South Africa, just a heads up. Like, that's still super Dutch.
Yeah.
Like there's entire towns where the population is, the majority is white.
Yeah.
It's still
actually fairly technologically advanced.
Right, exactly. The Dutch owned that country 70 years ago.
Yeah, it's not like clicks and hums like you're making it sound. Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what? I don't even like you, I think.
Our advice to you, dear Life for the Path, is we don't think we like you.
Go to Pella for school. Yeah, culture.
We're just not fans of you in general.
Katie's making a bad choice, but for reasons that you weren't thinking
of. Yeah, you aren't the one in the wrong. Katie is, because she's going with you.
Yeah. Dear New York, you're stupid. Here's what Secular says. Secular says, the big lesson here is that you talk too much. That said, I think it is short-sighted of you to give up your dream because your friend might try to go and might get in. Her possible presence during this time abroad should not have that much impact on your plans. Can you say something to her? Yes, you can. In fact, you can be honest with her and tell her how much you wanted to go on this journey independent of any of your friends. You can ask her if she would consider going at a different time than you. Obviously, your entreaty is no guarantee that she won't go, but you can state your case. Recognize that knowing someone when you are many miles away from home can be a comfort without being a drag. It is also possible that you may discover that some other person you know or who is from your school or city could also participate in the program at the same time. You are not the only one applying for this program. You could choose to relax, see who participates, and welcome whatever experience unfolds. Yeah, there you go. Why don't you stop trying to hold the entire country of South Africa in your little greedy hands and just let stuff go down? You know what I'm saying?
Johannesburg is mine.
Yeah.
But like, what type of long deceit are you trying to pull over there? Like, Katie, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. I'm acting like I'm from here. Like, they're going to pick you out.
All right. I'm not a fan of him. Still.
What do you mean?
Yeah, just the guy. Is it wrong to not like him? Like, I could still love him and hope he knows Jesus, but personally, I wouldn't want to run into him.
I think that's understandable.
Yeah, I don't like him. I'd beat him with a sheath or a scabbard.
How about you with a scabbard?
I wish my parents would have had a paddle and scabbard. You know what I'm saying? Like everyone else goes with a piece of wood with holes drilled in it or something, or like a tennis racket in the more aggressive.
You get the sheath of a sword.
Yeah, that's right. I can't imagine my old man giving me the whoopings with a scabbard.
Is that like a passive aggressive threat that it's just like, this is the lesser of the things I could have beat you with?
Wouldn't be worse if when it was time to get your whooping, like he put on an eye patch.
Take a swig of rum.
Yeah, get you scabbard.
I did look that up. That is correct. It is the scabbard is a sheath for the blade of a sword or dagger, typically made of leather or metal.
Metal.
A sheath for a gun or other weapon or tool.
Don't you think if you get the metal out of a metal container, you'd go every time it happened, like chewing on tinfoil. You know what I'm saying? Like the noise of the two metal sliding together, it'd be hard to hear.
Yeah.
A leather is just a much more comfy home for a sword.
Yeah. All right, you're listening live from the Path. Thanks for hanging with us this week.
You can reach me at mikesword.com. We continue this conversation on the wide web.
Sword and the scabbard at info@livefromthepath.com.
Right. Sword and the scabbard. only the elect can pull it out.
Wait, is that a combination?
That's predestined.
Reformed theology and the sword and the stone?
Yeah. The internet's a creepy place where people come together.
Yes. You're predestined to be able to grab this sword out of the scabbard.
I also own the website White Man in South Africa. I don't get a whole lot of traffic.
All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks for hanging with us. Shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. In the meantime, we will see you next week. What did I say that? Maybe not. Oh, yeah. Be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.